Hello, senior producers and assistant producers of the Carly Pilk Boys. On this week's episode, an insight into why Ricky is doing the charity boxing match. Carl's sick burn to Steve about why he invited him to the BAFTAs. A new segment on this show called Carl Advice, educating Ricky, including Carl's new tactic of having a second fact locked and loaded if Ricky doesn't like the first. And we also hear Carl's earliest memory and lots more. Hey, if you are a senior producer, the Brady Brett Boys, we are up to episode 4 of series 2 of The Office, Motivation. That will be out this Thursday. All right, let's get started. Series 2, episode 10 of The XFM Show. Welcome back to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
We are air checking the old Ricky Gervais radio shows. Obviously, I've listened heaps. This is Zach's first time. Today's show, series 2, episode 10, broadcast October 26, 2002. Zach, your Heat magazine style headline.
Is this London's favorite radio feature? Meet the mind behind Rockbusters.
So
this would be a kind of a profile on Carl.
Oh, yeah. The genius who came up with Rockbusters.
Yes.
Yeah, second week of it fully realized.
And it seems to be going off.
How so?
Well, they're getting a lot of, that's the old radio trick. Oh, man, so many emails coming in. So maybe they're not being honest with that, but I tend to think that they probably wouldn't artificially inflate their position.
They're not.
So like, I tend to believe them when they say they're getting lots of emails.
They're not like me, where literally last night I went, I put out a thing question saying like, hey, have a guess of what the final song in this countdown is going to be. And then it got to the final break and no one had called. I went, a lot of you guessed it correctly on the phone lines. Congratulations if you did. Anyway, yes.
No. There are so many instances where the bosses go, just add a bit of mayo on it. It doesn't matter if it's true.
Yeah.
Is that an Australian thing? Add a bit of mayo
add
on it.
Add a bit of mayo. Add a bit like of GST, I've heard as well.
Yeah, a bit of... That's definitely an Australian thing because that's the tax we have.
Add a bit of VAT to it.
And so, but I'm always like, oh, it's no fun if it's fake. Unless you make it, there's a guy on your network actually who does some football broadcasting and he always references very niche Seinfeld characters as the people who are texting in, and like they're kind of things you have to be a pretty big fan of Seinfeld to know who they are. And he'll be like, oh, just got a text message in saying that we're doing a great job and that they should put us on over the summer. That's from Bob Sacamano. And like it's like it took me a few weeks to realize. I was like, hang on, these are all from Seinfeld. And so I like that. That's funny
because that's almost that's a bit within itself.
Yeah but generally I don't like it when people I don't know, I just some people don't care if it's made up. People are like, who cares if it's fake? I like to think that it's real.
Yeah, I don't like fake callers for phone-in segments. They just make me feel a bit iffy, but it is a thing that it is a fine art. You can't be. It's like how Carl said in this show about when he faked his report card for an application for a job. He said, look, I didn't go overboard. I didn't give myself A's. I gave myself, I think, a couple of C's, maybe a B. If you're doing fake text messages, it can't be like, you guys are the greatest thing. You are God's gift to radio, because that's too much. It has to be like, yeah, I reckon you guys are all right. Here's a way you could improve, or just some contribution that feels real. It can't be too glowing.
Yeah, I guess that's the essence of a good lie, isn't it? Like an element of truth.
Yeah. I suppose. Well, we haven't done this in a while. Just like sort of a general check-in. How are you, Zach? You brought penguins in today. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, I found these in the international section of the supermarket.
They're a bit melted.
They were in the freezer overnight, but this is how long it took me to find a park.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's this area where you're living, Dave. I counted 10 trucks. Like, we would call them a ute, like a work truck, because they're renovating this house up the road and they're taking off all the parks.
Yeah, street parking around here during the day can get a little dodgy.
Give us a taste test. You've opened up the penguin.
And I'll just say there's two. There is... no limit parking directly opposite where I live, there's two cars that have been just abandoned there.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they ever move?
For 6 to 8 months.
There's never been a free park there.
I'm going to report them as like abandoned cars, but can you do that? I don't know. Yeah. I assume you can. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, taste test penguin.
They look like a Tim Tam.
Have we done this already?
No, we did Jaffa Cakes.
I just...
I've never had a penguin. This is the first time I'm looking at one.
Yeah, we had penguins at my family home when I was back there for a while. And I remember... Yeah, it's just a...
Can you show me the inside?
It's a Tim Tam with not quite as good chocolate.
Yeah. Every country thinks they have the best chocolate, though, because shock horror... It just depends on what you had as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no nostalgic connections. There's been no advertising with a genie.
Yeah.
Refilling a woman's packet of penguins that I grew up with. Yeah, not bad. Have you had one yet?
No, I have one later.
Okay. All right.
I've already had a number of pastries this morning.
What's the occasion? Is it Pastry Tuesday?
No, they just sold them in a multi-pack. And I was like, it'd be a waste if I didn't eat all of them.
It's like a bottle of wine. If you open it, if you don't drink it, it'll go bad. What else is going on? I'm hoping that you might notice a little bit of a sound difference in this week's episode because for a few weeks, since I've been back in Brisbane, we've been recording in my spare room. And turns out, shock horror, recording in a big, empty, echoey room is not great for sound quality.
No, so Dave's now got web in the cupboard.
Yeah, we're facing into the wardrobe. All my girlfriend's clothes are facing us. I've put up a blanket behind me. I don't think it's really doing a great job. Zach's just taking a photo right now. This will be on the Instagram, carly.pilkboys. And then, yeah, I don't know. Look, we're radio presenters. We're not radio engineers. So the ongoing audio refining, it's an ongoing project.
It's like, this is our XFM to better podcasters, capital FM.
Yes. Eventually, it will sound very sweet.
It's an ode to the radio show.
But I went on a bit of a deep dive into like acoustic treatment and stuff, and it is a wormhole. If I really got carried away, you could spend a fortune soundproofing a room and putting up the acoustic panels and on a better microphone.
Well, a lot of, I've spoken to radio engineers before. Where I used to work had a floating, they'd call it a floating studio. So it like wasn't connected to the floor. I don't really know how it works, but there was some type of layer between the floor of the building and the floor of the studio. But I'm like, ultimately, it's just voices that are 3 centimeters away from a microphone that are talking. Is it really that important to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in a radio studio to get it completely soundproof when it's like these days people are just recording things in their cupboards, making podcasts, and no one can tell the difference?
Yeah, talking into a bunch of clothes. What was the, I'm curious now, what was the makeup of the portable office? Was it a couple of...
No, it wasn't portable. It was just like the studio was in the middle of the office space and they said that it had a floating floor. So like you had to step up to get into it.
Oh.
But it was so that it's not, I'm guessing that it's not connected to the structure. So if something reverberates through the structure, it's not coming through the studio. So it's kind of like, you know how you have in some countries they... earthquake-proof their buildings by having them so that they can kind of move independently to the ground.
They can wiggle a little bit.
Yeah, I think that was generally the idea. But honestly, I could not tell the difference to any other studio I'd ever been in.
Yeah, but I mean, I might need to invest in a floating studio here in my apartment.
Maybe we could just like set everything up on like a waterbed or something. Like, is that the low budget version?
Why a waterbed?
Well, because I feel like that would absorb any any vibrations.
If this doesn't work, Zach, next week, we're going in the bathroom. Just because it's a smaller space. I know bathrooms are notoriously bad, but I feel like I can stick more. I got pillows up in the little port windows. I'm really trying, ladies and gentlemen. I'm really trying.
It looks like it is not far off a child's fort. That's the vibe that I've got at the moment. It's like you've got mum and dad sheets out. You've had a morning to yourself, and now you're asking mum and dad if you can sleep in it. Please, I'll be really good.
There is a Venn diagram where children and adults cross over, building children building forts and adults cross over, and that is podcasting. Because you're right, all we're missing is the roof.
Yep.
Yeah, how good was building forts?
The best. The best.
Did you build a good one?
Always. We'd, every holidays, we'd be in the bush and we'd build...
A bush fort?
Yeah, cubby houses. But then the whole fun of it, you know, we'd build bridges over the creek and we'd dig out... You get a big bush and then you cut out the middle of it. So, like, you disappear into it. Mm. And the whole fun of it's building it, because then you get finished and you're like, you sit in it for about 3 seconds. You're like, this is boring.
This sucks.
The whole fun is get in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was always jealous of family friends who had, like, a big L-shaped couch. Or, yeah, like, multiple couches that true. You could rearrange.
Well, I had a bunk bed.
Because you create the structure.
Bunk bed was pretty good because you can just throw a sheet over it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a quick way to get a fort.
Yeah.
Blanket. But again, that's another thing that's reemerged as an adult. Bunk beds in hostels traveling through Europe. I learned the hot tip. Bring a sheet with you. Because then you take the bottom bunk and tuck in a sheet under the mattress of the top bunk. Instant privacy.
Mm.
You can be wanking.
Is that how they sell it?
That's how I sell it to other people. Hey, have you ever wanted to have a big wank in a... room for 14 other beds? No, but then you tuck in the towel at the end, and then you don't have to. I don't know. I get the impression you probably haven't done that much time in hostels.
No, once or twice, but like not in a shared room.
I did like 3 months straight, and then a few times going to America. Even just reducing the need to make eye contact with everyone that comes in the room.
Yeah, a bit awkward.
It's worth it.
Did I tell you, because the radio station you work at, the one that I used to work at too, overlooks a backpackers. Did I tell you what we saw on air? I feel like I told you.
People having sex on the roof?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Because you used to do late nights, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so we're live during a break and my... my co-host just starts trailing off and I'm like, are you okay? He's staring out the window. He's like just not interested in the story. And he's like, I think I could be wrong. He's like, God. And he's like, either she's choking and he's performing a Heimlich maneuver, or those people are having sex on the roof.
Oh, wow. Did you start offering a play-by-play?
No, we went to a song and felt very awkward. We're like, I don't know. Like, I don't think, can we talk about that on air? I don't know.
When the song ended, was it still going?
I don't know. I didn't bring out a stopwatch. And, why? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm just, you know, wondering how long it went for.
I think it was pretty impulsive.
Mm-hmm.
And, probably over pretty quickly.
Yeah. Most rooftop sex sessions are pretty impulsive. I don't know if you plan much of that sort of stuff. But that's pretty fun. Yeah, no, I've looked, to this day, work in the same studio looking directly over those. It's sort of known as a hostel alley because there's a bunch of them. And, of course, during COVID, there was basically nothing happening. But I do a night's radio show now. When am I going to see some sex while broadcasting, while doing the Movie Mondays quiz, poorly presented plots? Let's get on with the show. So this is series 2, episode 10.
This, by the way, your girlfriend Brooke suggested that I have a licorice tea because you guys are out of chamomile.
Yes.
This is amazing.
It's good.
It's so good.
Maybe replace the chamomile?
Honestly, it's up there.
Okay.
I'm told it's good for your voice, and it feels like it coats your vocal cords.
Brooke is a performer. She would know. She's all about taking care of the vocal cords. I'm sticking with my English breakfast. Because we're talking about an English radio show. Also, I live in a suburb called Tenerife. I think I've mentioned that before on the show, but every time I think of it, I think of it as an XFM reference, Carl's favorite holiday destination. Break one. Carl's getting a bit of credit, becoming a bit of a producer. That is before he very quickly gets tormented by Ricky and Steve when trying to tease segments for this week's show. And Ricky and Steve decide they should never refer to stuff Carl has said in the past. Break two, they are talking about Ricky's celebrity boxing match. So it's coming up in about 5 weeks' time. And I'm very much looking forward to, Zach, when it happens, because there is a televised special all about the build-up, all about the training, and then the fight itself.
And is it funny or pretty straight?
It's a bit of both. Yeah. I mean, Ricky's funny, because also Ricky is training with these real hardened boxing veterans. and he's bringing his nervous, funny energy to it.
Well, the Office episode that I watched last night in preparation for the Brady Brett boys that we'll record later today.
Yep. Patreon.com/CullyPilkBoys.
Ricky gets his shirt off after he comes off stage, quote unquote stage, in the business seminar. And I was thinking at the time, I was like, oh, is this his boxing body? But this was recorded before he started training, isn't
it? Yeah, and even that episode would have been filmed a few months before. But that's funny you mentioned that. That's the moment that I paused and called Brooke in to watch what he does when the woman walks into the room.
Oh, when he sticks his chest out.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So Steve lets us in on a bit of Ricky's psyche. He would rather be able to beat up a bunch of thugs in a pub than be the funniest man in Britain. And we both had the same thought, Zach. Ricky Gervais must have loved the movie Nobody with Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah, a suburban kind of schlubby guy.
Suburban John Wick. He's a family man in the suburbs, but he can just destroy anyone he faces up to.
It's so interesting, though. That's such a man thing to desire.
Yeah.
It's like, I could take down a whole train of thugs. It kind of reminds you of like when you're a kid and you're watching, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or whatever, and they take on a whole army of foot soldiers. That's what you think of in your mind. You go out in the yard and you're like,
I could do it. If I was in the Old West, I'd walk into a saloon and a hushed silence would fall across.
It's interesting too, because a lot of funny people, being funny is the most important thing. So like, I remember Conan talking about once, he really struggled with the idea. Someone asked him, would you rather be funny or happy? And he's like, I'm going to have to think about it.
You've broken my brain.
So the fact that Ricky would rather be a buff guy who can beat up a train full of people is interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if he auditioned for that movie or if he, when it came out, he got on the
Were they the same age, you reckon? Bob Odenkirk and Ricky. Also, Bob Odenkirk has more of a dramatic pull because he did Better Call Saul.
Yeah. Which is he's a better actor as well.
Yeah, he's very good, Odenkirk.
I'm going to find out how old he is. He's 59. Yeah, they're about the same age.
Interesting.
Ricky's 60. So we also learned that Ricky has a blue belt in karate and that he's taken up smoking cigars. So then Steve comes up with a radio stunt, a classic radio stunt that since Ricky is training for a charity boxing match, they should let him do this.
Have you ever had a punch, like a boxing glove in the face?
No.
I think you should let us punch you next week live on the show.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
No, because because you've got to get used to it. Because I think you're going to either cry, just start crying uncontrollably, or just run away.
Good idea. They should have done it.
Yeah, these days you'd live stream it. Head to our website now or head to our Instagram to see Ricky get punched in the face. Oh, no, you'd record it on your phone in slow-mo, like at 240 frames.
Yeah, you might do a four-week build-up to an OB from an actual boxing ring.
Yeah.
It would all build up to that 10 past 8. At 10 past 8 this morning, Ricky's going to get punched in the face.
They always have like a loose connection to why they have to do it as well. It's like, have you ever been so far down a story arc or one that you're listening to on the radio and you're like, hang on, why are we doing this? And it's like, oh, he needs to get used to being punched in the face. And it's like, I guess that makes sense.
There was one, there's a politician in Australia, quite eccentric one called Bob Catter, and the Nova Breakfast Show in Sydney decided to build the Bob Catapult and catapult a car. It cost $100,000 and went for weeks and weeks. I think it was purely born out of the pun.
Yeah, that doesn't make much sense. You may have seen
but there's one of the few things that I've remembered.
You may know Bob Catter from, he had a pretty globally viral clip
about same-sex marriage
where he's kind of doing a very poetic piece of prose about, may a thousand flowers bloom but I ain't spending any time on it. He does this really sharp turn to talk about crocodile attacks in northern Queensland.
The real issue is how many people have been eating my crocs. Yeah, he's a politician from North Queensland. In break three, Ricky tries out a stand-up premise. Basically, that's how I'm describing it. The thing, the policing the small cars. And surely that they're like, oh, Sarge, no, don't give us the small car. And then they go on to talk about how police doing paperwork in cafes and that sort of thing. And it occurred to me that first responders, police, firefighters, the like, they have not been able to capitalize, Zach, on the working from home revolution.
No, you can't really zoom out a fire, can you?
No.
There's no button for shoot water.
Also, a firefighter is one of those professions. If you're a doctor on an aeroplane and someone's having a medical episode, is there a doctor here? You can go, yep, and then you can see them. But if you're an off-duty firefighter and a fire breaks out, you kind of...
You kind of need your gear.
You could say what you would do. Yeah.
Does anyone have access to a large amount of water?
Because otherwise...
No, we're 30,000 feet in the air.
Okay, but if we did, I would point the water at the fire and I would tell everyone to get back. It doesn't translate the skills, the profession.
No.
In the same way.
Yeah, I wonder during lockdowns and stuff like that, I guess the police were roaming around. I saw police going around. I don't know what it was like globally. But, you know, they'd go around, I think, just checking everyone was doing the right thing.
Yeah, I think it actually got worse. Like, for a lot of office workers, it got better in the sense of, you know, reduced commute and less time with your annoying co-worker, Janet. But for police, it got worse because they had to, like, enforce all the rules.
Yeah, I doubt any of them enjoyed doing that. Like, I don't think you got into the police force to make sure people were only... being in groups of three or...
A bit further apart. That's not point...
Hey, are you exercising 1.5? Or having a picnic? Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, get up. No picnic blanket.
Didn't I see you when I passed through here before? No mask. $200 fine. No, stay there. Don't walk away. Stay there. Got to give you a fine. Break four. Steve is still chasing tickets to go see Bruce Springsteen. He blames Carl. Wanted to know, Zach, have you ever just flat out asked for something on air?
No. I don't have much confidence. Everything I've done on air is designed in case it goes poorly. Like, there's always a ripcord. And I don't have any confidence in the fact that I could ask for something and someone would come through with it. You know, that's never entered my mind. Oh, a good way of getting this would be to ask for it.
What do you mean? Can you expand on that a little bit more?
I always think if we if we have something that is like you need certain stories for or something, it's like, okay, but if that doesn't work, we'll do this. Like either a backup story, so we always have something ready to go, or like, maybe it's like, oh, well, we'll just go on Instagram and find some people with those stories and get them to be callers or...
So it's not like Carl later in this episode where if his first fact doesn't work... He just hits him with another quick fact.
No. It's not as if you'd go like, hey, 13, 10, 60. What did you find in your car? And then you wait, and you go, okay, well, I'm not seeing any calls come in, so let me give you a fact about antelopes. It's never been in the same breath.
You should try that out sometime.
That'd be pretty funny, actually. It's like we're just abandoning that halfway through. They did that a few weeks ago on this show, didn't they? Didn't they have like a call-in topic that they're like, we decided not to do it anymore because none of the answers were very good.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, sorry, complete tangents just reminded me, and I've just not asked you about it. There's just been floods in Brisbane and you guys did local drive.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah, really well, thank you.
How much comedy was there in talking about people losing their homes?
Not much in people losing their homes, but they did, they wanted it to have some... There's like, it can't just all be really heavy because they're like, there's a lot of people that, you know, it's just too much if it's all super heavy. So they're like, if you can find some type, well, okay. So for example, there's an iconic, structure in Brisbane, Stefan Sky Needle. Stefan is an eccentric hairdresser who purchased a Sky Needle, like a large, it was like 80 meters tall. And it used to shoot a spotlight out at night and circle around.
The 80s were a better time.
He purchased that for the city as a gift. But then he's this eccentric hairdresser where his logo is a rainbow. And then while we're on air, a rainbow formed above Stefan's Sky Needle. And so that was fun. You know, that's a bit of a sign that things were going to get better for Brisbane. So, you know, we could have fun with that.
I can see you handling... more serious subject matter. How does Dom go? How do you feel like uncomfortable in that?
Yeah,
zone?
It is a bit weird. We have that was a part of like you always get the feedback. Can you do serious stuff though? Everyone's like, yeah, you can have fun, but if you want to be on a breakfast show, you got to handle the serious stuff. The funny thing about Dom though is, for example, Dom's got a journalism degree. Like he's fine. He can do serious stuff. He's done that. He worked with the ABC, which is like the BBC, where he like reported from unemployment lines and stuff like that. There's different people are multifaceted. We're adults. We're not always silly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like you're silly on air, and then some people think that you're like that all the time. I'm like, I've got a family at home. Yeah. Like I'm not.
Yeah. Fair enough. Oh, cool. So it went well.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Nice. Back on the show, a absolute savage burn from Carl when Ricky asks this question.
Carl, what's Steve ever done for you? That's what you got to ask yourself. What has Steve ever done for you?
Well, he took me to the BAFTAs. Yeah, but only because no one else would probably want to go with you.
Don't you love Steve's? I think Steve's high-pitched reaction betrays his true feelings there. That he cannot believe he said something like that. Oh, that maybe he actually couldn't get anyone else to go to the BAFTAs with him.
Yeah, that kind of constant jostling between Carl and Steve is still there.
Yeah, and I think that is such an awesome burn that grab needs a little something extra.
Carl, what's Steve ever done for you? That's what you got to ask yourself. What has Steve ever done for you?
Well, he took me to the BAFTAs. Yeah, but only because no one else would probably want to go with you.
Got him! Stay down, Steve. sick burn. Ricky says he and Carl are texting each other. Did you pick up on that? He said, oh, man, me and Carl are texting each other trivia. Isn't that sweet? It's a cute little friendship insight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've been texting previous weeks. Remember, Carl would do Would You Rathers.
Yeah.
I think that's where the feet for hands came in.
Yeah. Yeah, what would you... Don't worry, I've made my mind up. But I love it. It's a 40-year-old man and a 30-year-old man just texting...
They have quite a cute relationship, yeah, whether it's going sweet. For a curry or playing football in the garden.
Well, exactly. It's very. There's something very childlike about Ricky and Carl's friendship at this point. It's very innocent. They are, playing soccer in the yard. They're walking down the street, encountering cheeky Cockney chaps and texting each other trivia like this.
You can see it's from Carl at the top, but just read it out as you scroll down. Just read it out loud.
Is this a text message from...
Yeah, this is a text message to me from Carl. Read it out.
To see at night as well as an owl, you would need eyes the size of grapefruits. If only Stephen could turn his head right round as well.
Carl, I can't read it.
That does seem a little unnecessary. Like, it's, like, really leveraged in, isn't it?
It's so good. It's so funny. Steve is never far from Carl's thoughts. In break five, it's when they get onto the topic of Carl surviving, waking up to find an anaconda swallowing from his feet up. Anacondas are in the same category as... like quicksand for me and ingrown toenails, things I was very scared of as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
What was on your list? I think there's a John Mulaney bit where he says, like, when I was a kid, I thought quicksand would factor into my life far more than it has ended up.
Is that where that started? Is it? Because I have seen that as a meme a lot. Was that a John Mulaney joke?
Well,
I doubt he took it from the meme.
It's somewhere, but I don't even know why. Was it Indiana Jones movies?
No, it's like one of those classic things. So cartoons, this is my theory. So when I mentioned Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles earlier, they've got katanas, these razor-sharp swords, but they never attack anyone with them. They have to cut down the chandelier, and the chandelier falls on them because they had to figure out a way of just being violent enough.
Yes.
There was a great college humor cartoon on it years ago where it's like he started using the katanas to actually disembowel people. And the other Ninja Turtles are like, what are you doing?
Yeah, because there's been multiple Ninja Turtles movies and he often is like slicing away at people, but you never see the moment.
But also the movies,
someone in
the movies might be a little, they're a bit older. These cartoons were meant for kids. But my point is, I wonder if Quicksand was a way of having some type of conflict that they could run into that wasn't violent, but it did still have high stakes. So like if they're running through the jungle, the characters, they're not going to be attacked by a panther, because that would be way too confronting for a six-year-old. But I wonder if Quicksand was just enough.
That's an interesting thought. It's also something that creates tension and a situation that they need to get out of for their lives, but still allows them a moment to talk.
Yeah.
It's like they're being, you know, when you're being kidnapped or held hostage, but you don't need to go jump through the hoops of establishing the antagonists, the bad characters who put them in that situation. It is just simple as one moment I'm running, next moment we're stuck.
And also it's just something that can come out of nowhere. If you think of writing, it's just a coincidence. We've just coincidentally run into Quicksand. Unless they were like, oh no, we can't go that way. That's the Quicksand field.
Yeah. So they're... Carl's suggestion, by the way, or his the advice that he's picked up is let the anaconda swallow you up to your knees, then cut its mouth, peel it off, and walk away.
I doubt, and I could be made to look like a fool here, how often do adult-sized humans get eaten by anacondas? I imagine it doesn't happen.
Answers on often. A postcard, and send them in to carly.pilkboys. I don't know. I do remember growing up with a friend who was very into anacondas, and we'd watch the movie Anaconda quite regularly. And I remember seeing in a book that one had been cut open and there was a full-size adult inside its belly.
Wait, hang on. That was a real book or like supposedly. A fake book?
No, supposedly. Are you doing a bit of Googling right now?
Okay. The number one response just says on Google... reports of giant constrictors actually killing and eating humans are quite rare.
Okay.
So it doesn't seem like it's impossible.
Green anacondas are one of the few snakes capable of consuming a human. However, this is extremely rare.
Well, one of the number one hits as well is five reasons why you can't get an anaconda to eat you. Okay, hang on, what? That sounds like that someone wants to be eaten by an anaconda.
Five ways to get your anaconda to eat you. Play hard to get.
I think, though, don't you think that was like a common following on from what you were saying about childhood with Quicksand? The same thing with an anaconda. Carl's thought process here is like he's totally relieved now because he has this plan. It's like once someone has explained how to get out of it, you're like, phew, okay, well, I feel like I'm equipped with the right knowledge now.
I can bravely stroll into the Amazon as long as I've got my knife. But this conversation brings me to a new segment called Carl Advice. Because last week, Carl served out a bit of advice on the show. If you got problems, don't think New York's the answer. Carl Advice. And this week's Carl advice...
If you're going to go into a jungle...
Always have a knife, okay.
Always have a knife, yeah. Simple.
That was this week's edition of Carl Advice on the Carly Pilk Boys. So then they go into educating Ricky, stocking Aiken and Waterman, not his vault, and get a lobe of this. Then on to break six. Sea lion... Before we move on, because this is your first time hearing them, did any of those headlines... Hearing them for the first time, because I just can't remember. Did you start thinking, what could that be about?
Kind of. They're also hard to digest when you hear them in audio form. I'm driving around and I'm like, what was it? Not your vault? I think the guys made the same assumption. I thought like a vault that you might put valuables in. That's what I went to.
You said you're driving around. Was your daughter asleep in the back? Was
yes, that's correct.
Getting her to sleep. It's a good
that hasn't changed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good way to multitask. What age does that stop?
It should have stopped. Yeah, doesn't like sleeping.
Okay, yeah. Well, occasionally Brooke has to drive me around in her little Kia Rio, me just in the back because I can't sleep.
And are you forward facing or back facing?
I'm curled up on the, I've got my little, I'm right through the middle, actually.
Well, actually, now that the fuel prices have gone up like 30%, we actually have to stop. It's becoming, it's like $10 a drive.
Yes.
Like, it's so much.
Sorry, look, I love you and I want you to sleep, but not that much.
Well, also, now it's cooling down, I can go back to what I used to do, is like just walking 6 kilometers. Okay. In like the stroller, but it's like it got too much. I'm like, this is taking too much energy to put you to sleep.
Does she, or did you, or maybe this is what comes after falling asleep in the car in during a drive? I was a mad go to sleep at restaurants kid. I would go under the table and curl up at everyone's feet.
She's too young for that. I did that when I was page boy at like my cousin's wedding or something like that. And, I fell asleep under the table.
But I think it's because it, like, the driving thing, there's something very cozy about the rhythm and the 100%. Vibration. When it's
you're
warm
in a cocoon.
And you've eaten and you can just hear everyone chatting. It's very, there's some sort of internal primal feeling
it
of
feels
safety.
Like, yeah, it feels like you're a mouse in a hole in the forest.
And you know that everything's going to be okay. And you can, some of the best sleeps I've had have been on the floor.
This is such like something that like in therapy they'd be like, talk about that more. like the idea, because I totally relate to the idea of like when, you know, like I remember being at my grandparents' house. So my parents and my grandparents were in the next room playing cards all night or whatever. And I'd go to sleep in the bedroom and I could just hear that murmuring. And it makes you feel very comfortable. You know, that there's someone out there.
Yeah.
They're out there watching over you kind of thing.
I used to ask my parents to stay up and keep watching TV until I went to sleep, because I used to sleep with the door open.
Yeah.
And so I could see the light and I could hear them, because knowing they were awake
it's
and
comforting.
Watching TV made me feel safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this has been Therapy Corner on the Carly Cook Boys. And let's move on to break 6. A sea lion has a better memory than an elephant. There we go. We've learned another thing. And Carl comes in with a great observation. Well, they don't get up to much, so they should remember, because it's the story about the sea lion that came back to, I don't know, a zoo or wherever it was 10 years later and still remembered the trick that it did. And Carl rolls out the great question, what do they do? His question for a lot of animals in the animal kingdom, what do they even do? They talk about get a lobe of this, and it's a ridiculous story about a woman hitting her head, a deaf woman who hits her head, and then her hearing comes back. It's ridiculous, and Carl...
No truth in it?
Ricky... Well, I tried to Google, find the real story. You know, I like to do that. Didn't find anything. But what did you think of the tactic that when Ricky didn't like that fact... Carl goes, oh, it's all right. Well, I'll hit you with this instead.
She wearing a Walkman and it fell out. And she'd realised, oh,
No explanation.
There's no explanation. Well, why is that teaching me something
right,
then?
So I knew you'd say this, right? So I thought, right, I'll stick something on it. Do you know that bees are deaf?
No! No, you can't just... No!
I love it.
If you ask someone something they don't know the answer, they don't tell you something else.
Love it. It reminds me of like an Ocean's 11, but we were trying to get caught. Like, you know, like he was like, he's like, no. I was prepared for you to say that it was a bad fact.
You've fallen for my trap. Yes.
I love his problem solving, that instead of making the actual thing better, he's like, I'll just do more. Like, I'll just put more half-assed facts in there.
That's an excellent way to look at it. I also like the way Steve looks at what Carl has just done.
That was the equivalent, Carl, of running away when we asked you a question. Yeah. Oh!
Got him back!
Back and forth. It was kind of like a distraction method, wasn't it?
Yeah. Don't worry about that. Have it over here.
Are bees deaf?
Yes, I did look it up. Bees are almost totally deaf and rely mostly on their sense of touch. In a single colony, there can be as few as 5,000 or as many as 100,000. After mating, the queen lays up to 3,000 eggs per day. It makes sense, because if they weren't deaf, it's awful noisy. I don't know if you've ever been around bees. Just constant buzzing.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to sleep.
I'm a big fan of bees.
Yes, you are.
There's posting them on my Instagram all the time.
Bee content, Zach Mander, look him up, because you also know the different species of bees as well. There's the one with a blue stripe on it.
Yeah, what's my favorite bee? Blue banded bee, thanks for asking.
And why is that?
Because it looks cool. And then there's other reasons too. It's a buzz pollinator, so they buzz even harder. No one buzzes harder than a buzz pollinator, Dave.
And what benefits does buzzing harder bring?
Oh, because it like it adulates the pollen, I guess. And it knocks it out of the flower.
And what does
Because you know the birds and the bees, right? You know what the bees are doing. You know what the birds are doing.
Yeah,
you know how they're vital to our to our ecosystems. No, they go and they get. What do they get from there? Pollen? I don't know. Nectar? They get something from the flower, but they're going flower to flower. So in the meantime, they're fertilizing the flowers. They're taking one thing from a male flower and taking it to the female flower. And then, oh, that's how we get fruit.
And so the royal blue, is that what it's called?
No, blue-banded bee.
The blue-banded bee is the best at doing that.
Not necessarily. Okay. It's just cool. And also, it's really fast. When you look at it, it's noticeably faster than the others. It's the cool bee.
And you film them in slow motion. So
yeah, I got a lot of time on my hands.
Yeah. Zach Mander. They roll straight into the second part of Educating Ricky. It's Not His Vault, which was the... What was that one? Oh, the electric guy. He couldn't take a bath. Again, couldn't find anything about that one.
Yeah, that one seems... that didn't even seem like it had enough for them to riff on. They were kind of like, we don't know where to start on this one.
And then the third one, Put a Sock in It. Do you agree with Ricky that that one's a real one?
What's plausible, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just
to me, it makes more sense than putting a sock in a mouth. And I've always thought that was weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sure. Why not? But they kind of, you know, they come unstuck when they're good. Because, like, that's his goal. But then when they achieve the goal, it's worse radio. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's any time where, like, when he did the whole series of learning about Che Guevara and Hitler and stuff, we had sort of nothing to say about it. Because when things go well.
It's kind of like, yeah, okay.
It's less funny.
But Ricky even mentions that, I think. He says, see, that's a good one. And he said, less entertaining. But I learned something.
Yeah, true. Let's move on then to Carl's quick response. I love this. What is Carl's earliest memory? Quick.
Start now. Go back. What do you remember? What's the first thing you remember?
As a kid.
Yeah, just anything right. Now.
Being in a hall and having our dog licking my face.
That's your earliest memory?
Did he say being in a hall? Well,
no, just being in the hall at home.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Funny.
He had that ready to go. Do you have yours? Earliest memory? Go.
It's hard to put them in chronological order. I imagine, because it's a reference to my age, I remember fighting with my older sisters because they were calling me a toddler. And I said, I'm not a toddler. So what would that be? Like 3, I guess, probably?
Yeah. Did you start quoting your age in that way that kids do? I am 3 2/3.
Yeah, I think because I didn't like the idea that they were criticizing. A toddler implies that I toddle. And I'm like, I can walk just fine. Thank you very much.
I have a memory of being at a little like petting zoo type thing and taking myself out the back, finding a giant broom, like an adult-sized broom, and then just pushing it. But I wonder if that is informed by the fact that there is a photograph of that
moment.
Yeah,
I'm always thinking that.
So they show, and I go, I remember that because I have the vision, like, you know, but maybe it's, there's a little bit of, like, the photo is giving me the memory.
Does memory freak you out or just make, it's just weird how, like, you can't remember something and then you sit there. And you kind of squeeze your eyes. And, like, and you're like, oh, I remember now. Like, isn't that weird? Shouldn't it be hard and fast? Shouldn't it be either you remember or you don't? Why can you try to remember?
It's your brain's RAM. It's
booting
it's
up.
Searching. The electricity's going through your brain and trying to find the toddler memory.
That's right, because my wife talks about the neural pathways. So okay. It depends on how strong the neural pathway is. So I try, when I have like nice memories, I try to strengthen. I'm like, I want that pathway to be a highway so I can always remember this.
Get strong. So when I have an intrusive thought, if I'm just walking down the street and my brain goes, hey, remember that time you hugely embarrassed yourself? Is that because those moments of intense like feeling and embarrassment create strong neural pathways?
That's possible. That sounds plausible. We've reached the extent of my knowledge.
Can you please ask your psychologist wife and come back to me next week?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. So then they get onto the rock buses in break 8. The big prize this week, Stigmata. I'll never not be jealous that they were able to just give away DVDs. What I would give to just be able to do prizing on a radio show that is just a DVD or a CD, and people like that.
Oh, you mean everyone expects $10,000 now?
Well, you can't, because everyone goes, well, what am I do with this? What do I do with a DVD?
Right. Yeah, what could you give away now? Movie tickets? I guess that's not bad.
It's Uber Eats vouchers. Movie tickets isn't bad, yeah. Fuel's a big one right now. We'll just give you a milk bottle full of fuel. Stigmata, 22%, the official rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
What is Stigmata? I'm not sure who's in it.
Patricia Arquette and David Byrne, I think, is who they say.
Have you seen it? Any good?
I remember when it came out, and it's about a woman who gets the stigmata thing. No, I don't think I've seen it.
I think Steve, who's into films, kind of says, "Oh, it's all right" in this episode.
Yeah, I think Ricky says that. Yeah.
So I don't think it's like laughably bad.
No, it's not quite Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
But 22% official reviews, 63% audience score. So it's one of those ones where there's a big discrepancy between what the critics and the audience thought. The critic consensus, the story is unconvincing and the acting is weak.
Mm.
So the Rockbusters answers, Justin Timberlake, Weezer, Coldplay. You got Coldplay, didn't you?
And Weezer.
You did get Weezer. Well done.
I was annoyed that I didn't get Timberlake in the end. It's one of those ones where you go,
Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
We won't be
That's
doing...
pretty good, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I think that one's pretty good. Except for the fact that Ricky points out that a lake and a river are very different things.
Yeah, there's a... Is this going to give too much away? Will it rob you of the enjoyment of when it actually happens? I don't care. I'll risk it. There's one where the answer is Whitney Houston that is just as delightful as the Justin Timberlake.
They do remind me. I did enjoy driving around trying to think of the Justin Timberlake one. And it reminds me, I'm like, was this their version of Wordle? Like, you know, where everyone sits down and they're like, I'm going to do the Rockbusters today. Did you get the Rockbusters? What were the Rockbusters?
Yeah, if only. If only New York Times had bought Rockbusters off Carl for $1 million. We won't be doing... I won't ask you next week's Rockbusters because I think we tried
it. It's too excruciating.
And you're right, it's excruciating, I think, to listen to. Particularly because I throw them at you. There's no prep time. So in break 9, when they give away Rockbusters, we get a bit of a key phrase in the development of their relationship. And that is when Ricky makes this observation about Carl.
Ricky Gervais with me, Steve Merchant, Carl Pilkington, who's our producer. Proper producer now. No, but it's more like it now, isn't it? Before he was someone who pressed the buttons. Then he was someone who pressed the buttons who we just made talk like a performing monkey.
I hear he's going to be lured away by the Today programme on Radio 4. Because they've lost their news editor, I think.
Educating Ricky, quite topical.
I feel like there's a bit of jealousy from Suvette. I think he's a producer. That's a fine title for him.
Well, what Ricky was getting at before he was interrupted was that at first he was just pushing the buttons, then he was pushing the buttons and we made him speak. Now he's bringing all of the content. He is running the show.
And yeah, there's a distinction between an FM producer and a producer of a high-class news show. That's fine, but there's a difference between presenters on those things as well.
Yeah. They then go into the song with a story, 24 Hours from Tulsa, by Gene Pitney. They react to the song and talk about songs that make them cry and end by not promoting the episode of The Office, which is going to be on tomorrow night, the motivational speaking episode. Blows my mind. They just do not. And I was thinking, is it because they don't want to associate, while it's on TV, they don't want to associate this radio show with such high quality?
I just think it's they don't have a plan.
Yeah.
I just think they don't think about it. I think Ricky's the type of guy who he just shows up to this radio show. He doesn't have a plan for the show. I don't think he's the type of guy that's like, I want everyone to watch it. I'm going to go to a lot of effort. I think he's the type of guy that's like, you watch it if you want to, or I don't care.
and it adds to the myth of this show and its place alongside.
What do you think? Why do you think they don't promote it?
I think you're probably right. I also think maybe they see it as sort of uncool to
self-promote.
Self-promote.
Maybe.
Whereas I am currently making a cartoon and part of our whole marketing campaign is because I'm making it with a friend who does a whole different radio show in another city. A whole part of the marketing campaign that we had to like pitch as part of how to get funding for it from the, you know, the funding body here in Australia was that every single week when the new episode is coming out, they will dedicate a segment to it on the radio show to say, hey, what's this week's episode of Childish Dino? Well, this week is going to be this, and they'll play a clip, and they'll say, oh, go watch it now on
well, because online. These funding bodies, they want some insurance that the money's just not going to disappear.
Yeah, yeah. But obviously, the BBC doesn't have the same thing.
Can't we just make art for the sake of it, Dave?
No. That's what we're doing here on the Carly Pilk Boys. What was your favourite bit from the show?
Probably the way Carl has the pistol hidden in his ankle holster, ready with the B fact.
The bonus fact. I like that. But I love his burn on Steve about the BAFTAs, that the only reason he took Carl is because no one else wanted to go with him. Next week, Series 2, Episode 11, comedian Ross Noble gets in touch with the show.
Great.
And how cool is this, Zach? I am speaking to Ross Noble for my regular radio show next week, and you better believe I'm going to crowbar in questions about Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, you should. And can we play a clip on this show?
I'm going to do a whole separate and say, Ross, look, okay, the main interview's over. Now, Carl Pilkington.
Yeah, do it.
Talk, please.
Because he lives in Australia now.
He does.
Like
yeah.
On a farm somewhere here.
Yeah, in Victoria. We get the first appearance of the legend that is Richard Anderson, the biggest fan of the show. And Carl sells a couch, a futon, live on air. that's next week.
That's going to be good.
Contact us, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. I'm getting a bit slack at responding to them, so I apologize if you've been in touch and I haven't replied yet. I will get to it. If you do want to get in touch and get a response quick, patreon.com, baby. That's where to do it.
Oh, look at him.
Patreon.com.
Look at him. What a superstar.
Carly Pilk Boys. I will always prioritize contact that we get on that over just the regular email.
He'll take a photo with you if you're in the official meet and greet. But if you come up to him on the street.
Sorry, no time. No, I do. I see them. CarlyPilkBoysPod@gmail.com. Instagram, Carly.PilkBoys. That is where you'll find the link to our merch as well. Someone sent me, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting your name right now, but someone got the, there's the water bottle with a drawing of a glass of water and it says boring underneath it. Someone got one and sent me a photo of it.
Yeah, you
got
to post that on Instagram.
I know, I'm no good at that. And also, look, I've got the...
Yeah, I've noticed yours.
The mug with the horse in the house design. Nice and simple. Carly.PilkBoys, Zach Mander on Instagram and TikTok. What's going on your TikTok these days, Zach?
You can see the rom-com with the possum outside my house. That was something that went pretty good last week.
Zach, Z-A-C-H-M-A-N-D-E-R, Zach Mander, Instagram, TikTok. I'm David Ferrier, Cartoons. That animation that I said I'm making, eventually you'll get some news about that on there. Anyway, that's it. We'll see you next week for Series 2, Episode 11. If you are a senior producer of the show on Patreon, look forward to the Bready Brett Boys. We're covering The Office Series 2, Episode 4, Motivational Speaking. That's going to be out on Thursday. Someone did pick me up that usually I just put it out the day after this, but... going to put it out on Thursdays just to give this episode a bit of breathing room. So we'll see you on the Patreon then. Zach, see you next week.
See you, bye.
Yeah, just tell me right. Now.
Being in the hall and having our dog licking my face.
That's your earliest memory.